Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Today we get a preview of the inaugural Tulsa American Film Festival, which gets underway tomorrow at the Circle Cinema. We'll hear from one of the organizers as well as one of the filmmakers. The festival focuses on films about America and American themes with a special emphasis on Oklahoma filmmakers, and will feature over 50 films, both feature-length and shorts, as well as narrative, film, and documentary. I'm joined today by Colleen Thurston, the program director for the festival, and by filmmaker and journalist Sheila Bright, who is the writer-director of the feature documentary Lone Man's Land, which opens the festival Thursday evening at 6 at the Circle. Lone Man's Land is based on Bright's reporting about the ranchers of Cimarron County around Kenton, Oklahoma, a tiny community at the very end of the panhandle in the shadow of Black Mesa. The film looks at what appears to be a dying lifestyle. The family owned ranches there that raise cattle on nearly a quarter million acres of leased state land in the county. Changes in the lease terms have opened the land to outside speculators, and families who have ranched that land for multiple generations have found themselves priced out. It's a beautifully photographed feature with warm human stories that poses questions with no easy answers. Sheila Bright joins me along with Colleen Thurston to talk about Lone Man's Land and the Tulsa American Film Festival, which runs Thursday through Sunday at the Circle Cinema with special events at the Woody Guthrie Center and Gilcrease Museum. Colleen and Sheila, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Colleen, this will be the first year for this Tulsa American Film Festival. How did this festival get started, and what is the focus of this particular festival?
Well, we are Tulsa American Film Festival, so the focus is American films. We leave that up to the filmmakers to loosely define that. Some of our films were produced outside of the United States. Some of our films are not American filmmakers, but for whatever reason, we see them as American films, and the filmmakers have defined them as such. That being said, we felt that Tulsa was the hub of America. It's the heartland. It's the crossroads of cultures. And we thought that that was a unique aspect that we could use here and that we could really sell well.
Now, how do you get a film festival started? I mean, you have to send out a proposal, I guess, ask for submissions of films. How do you go about getting a festival started?
You have to get a great team together, first of all. Ben Arredondo is our festival director, and he brought together myself and Adam, who is our production director. And from there, we garnered a lot of community support and partners, people that have jumped on board and helped us in many different ways. Sent out a call for proposals, or a call for submissions, excuse me, and got in hundreds of submissions of films from all across America and, like I said, the world.
Now, looking at the submissions, a lot of short films, but a number of features, some narrative features as well as documentary features. And it seems like what you chose for the lineup is a pretty even match between the two genres.
I think so. We have 47 films. We're very proud to feature over half of them have local ties. So we have a really strong burgeoning film industry here in Oklahoma. And we have a lot of people who have maybe left Oklahoma but are still really connected. And we're featuring a lot of those films, like you said, documentaries, features, short films, some that are a little more experimental even.
So sort of run through the schedule, if you would. It begins Thursday, and it begins with Sheila's film, which is Lone Man's Land. That's in the very first showing at the Circle Cinema. But you're going to have a couple of theme nights. There's some University of Tulsa filmmakers doing a showing of short films, correct?
Right. We have a showing of TU short films. They're a selection from the past few years, actually. So you'll see some older or filmmakers that have graduated already, and we're still trying to support them. We want to show that this is what's coming out of Tulsa. These are the up-and-coming filmmakers. Thursday night, as you mentioned, Lone Man's Land is at 6. 7:45, we have another feature documentary called Unbranded, which has similarities to Lone Man's Land, as Sheila can attest and talk about. And that is preceded by a short film, a short Western, actually. Throughout the weekend, we have films Friday evening at Circle Cinema, Saturday afternoon and evening at Circle Cinema, and we have a special feature at the Woody Guthrie Center on Saturday, Bound for Glory, which stars David Carradine and covers Woody Guthrie's life as he moves out to California. Academy Award winning for cinematography. And Sunday, all day, we have a free program at the Gilcrease Museum, and that is American Indian films. That starts with another documentary at 11 o'clock about uranium mining and how that affects water and also the land and people. And then we have short films throughout the day. And our closing film at the Gilcrease Museum is The Verdigris, which is another local filmmaker, Bo Jennings, who is also a singer-songwriter, and made a documentary about following the footsteps of Will Rogers. We also have another retrospective classic, a Will Rogers film, State Fair, that we'll show before that. Our closing night film is at the Circle Cinema, and that is preceded by an award ceremony.
All right. Well, it sounds like a really interesting first attempt at a festival here, and it sounds like you have a great roster for films, and one of them is by my other guest today, Sheila Bright. And you've been writing about the far end of the panhandle for well back into the 90s, maybe, I think. Oklahoma Today, you did some feature articles. But this is really a serious issue, which it's something we sort of hold dear, that image of the independent rancher out in Cimarron County, maybe one of the last vestiges of that real independent family-run ranches, and how it's not looking bright for their future. Tell us a little bit about Lone Man's Land.
Lone Man's Land is a documentary. It's my first documentary I co-directed and co-wrote with Ezra Gentle. And kind of the background of it is I wrote a story in 2012 called The Last of Kenton. And Kenton, Oklahoma, is a town of 20 people in Cimarron County. One of the ranchers described it, it's at the tail end of the dog as far as the panhandle goes for Oklahoma. I wrote a story. I spent over a year going back and forth. I had gone there kind of to do a story for Oklahoma Today on Boise City, and I just saw this little dot of a town, and I went. I fell in love with it.
It's right on the New Mexico
border. Yeah, you just drive through what there is a main street, and on the other end, there's a gravel road, and that's New Mexico. And I don't know what it is about that town, but I, you know, just being a journalist for many years, many, many years, there's something that grabbed me when I was there, and I knew I couldn't let that go, and it was worthy of more than just one visit. And apparently it was worthy of more than just one story, because now it's catapulted into this film. And Ezra read my story. He was wanting to do a film in Cimarron County, and so that's how we got together.
Well, Cimarron County it's an interesting county. It's different in many ways than any other part of the state. First of all, it's the very last county in Oklahoma in the panhandle. It's Boise City is the county seat. But we think of like government-owned land as being something way out west, like Nevada, Idaho, Colorado, and Wyoming, and all these mountain states with large BLM holdings. But in fact, a good part of Cimarron County is owned by the state.
Yes, it is.
And this is the crux of the story involving these ranching families.
Yeah, a issue that faces them now is that through several acts that were when our state was formed, land was set aside to build schools and for revenue generator for schools. And as communities developed, they allowed them to swap land and like sort of push land they didn't need in a certain township for that many schools, or they got a better price for it to be developed. And they pushed it, they traded it. And so 1/5 of all state school lease land is located in Cimarron County. Well, for many years that worked great because the only thing to do out there mainly is to ranch. And so this land, you know, it would be 26,000 acres for one ranch, and their land they own is kind of woven into this lease land, and there's no fences, and they've leased it for years and years and years. But in the 80s, there was a Supreme Court decision that required it to be auctioned. And
the lease rights.
And yeah. So, you know, a family maybe for 50 years they've been leasing this land. And then now that it's open for auction, what's happened in about the last 15 years is outside entities, corporate ranches, hunters have come in and raised the price up at these auctions to where the families, you can't make a living off the price that you would have to pay to lease it. And it's really put them at a disadvantage.
And we follow one family in particular, the Apple family. How far back do they go? Fourth or fifth generation ranchers?
Yeah, fifth generation ranchers. They're actually, their great-grandfather, I think it is, was the original 101 ranch. Now, that's not the 101 that you see in the movie, the cowboy, you know, right. The show business. But there was a 101 ranch that sort of bordered Colorado, New Mexico, and Oklahoma, and it was very well known, and it was a cowboy's ranch, you know. And much of these cowboys out there, they're cowboys. I mean, they're the type of people who run their land and run their ranches that are respected by other ranchers. And so it's sad, I think, that that's slipping away from us.
We have a quote from the film that we can play. This is a Kent Nearing, who's a ranch manager for an absentee owner. He owns land, and I guess he's leasing land, and this guy serves as ranch manager. But he's talking about that ethos that you're talking about. Let's hear that.
Really got a liking and a feel for being good stewards of the land, and went through a lot of schooling and educating in ranch management and grazing, how to handle the land and graze pasture land. And that's been my passion, is taking care of the land. And when you go into a piece of country, when you leave it better shape than what you found it.
That's a clip from Lone Man's Land. That's Kent Nearing, a ranch manager out in Cimarron County. My guests today are Sheila Bright, a documentary filmmaker and journalist and writer and director of Lone Man's Land. We also have Colleen Thurston, the program director for the Tulsa American Film Festival. Lone Man's Land kicks off the festival with a showing at 6 o'clock Thursday as we talk about this film. One of the things I love about this is you're very sympathetic to these ranchers' families, but you're very balanced in telling the story, because we hear it from the perspective of the county and what this has done for the county, because they're supposed to be compensated for all this land being held in common, but they're not compensated anywhere near. So this land is held in trust for the schools. It does go to the schools. The money from the leases go to the schools. It doesn't go to the Cimarron County schools. They're some of the poorest funded in the state.
That's right. You know, because their population, their student population is so small, because people have migrated out of there because there are no jobs, and they get no ad valorem for that land. That's the biggest issue, is there's nothing to compensate the county as a whole for the ad valorem that they would receive for these vast amount of acreages.
Yeah, in fact, which commerce is going on, which, right. You know, in the form of leases, they are compensated, but it's like 10 cents an acre.
Yeah.
So it's $23,000 for a quarter of a million acres.
Yeah. It's rough. So it's not just, you know, the schools that suffer, but, I mean, the government as a whole. And that's also sort of, you know, they're in a catch-22. I mean, really, they are landlocked. They are like an island. They're landlocked by this state leased land that they get very little revenue on. So there's no way to bring in, you know, other industry. And these people that are on the city council there are ranchers. You know, I mean, they've got their hands full just trying to make a living. So it really is a part of our state, I think. Our state government needs to focus a little more attention on.
And in fact, when you're driving through the panhandle, you know when you're in Cimarron County, because all of a sudden you went from Texas County, which doesn't have all this land held in trust, and they have ad valorem taxes. Roads are decent. You get to Cimarron County, the roads go bad. You go to Boise City, and it's obviously there's no comparison between the two counties as far as wealth and prosperity.
Yeah, that's true. It's a dust town.
No. Yeah. Now, the other part of the story is that you also talk to people from the OEA, the Oklahoma Educational Association, which brought the lawsuit because they felt like they weren't getting enough money for education. So you can see for how the rest of the state sees this. They see it a black and white issue of this land was not producing the amount of money it should, and now it is for education. But at the same time, I think most Oklahomans would say there's a soft spot for these ranching families that are really taking care of the land. And that's, as you heard from the quote, if you're leasing this land, there's no way you're going to make any improvements to it over 3 or 5 years, whatever the term is, because you'll just get outbid if you make improvements next time.
Yes, you know, it's really difficult to find out what the solution is. I mean, you know, after us spending so much time out there, we wish we knew the solution, but we don't know the solution either. But I think we want to raise the questions. And that was our goal with the documentary, is to put a human face, a human element to this issue that a lot of people in Oklahoma don't even realize exists. And it's existing in a time where it feels like to me this is a turning point, and we need to do something here. You know, we as a state need to step up and do something. The School Land Commission office actually operate leases that are business leases, and the leases extend 20 plus years. And that would be something, I think, that could be somewhat of a solution, is to establish longer lease times for the ranchers there.
And you've talked to ranchers that that lost out, and they basically, they're at an age where they could retire, so they retired. But you can see just sort of the feeling of pain where if a family's been, you know, leasing an acreage for 30, 40, maybe generations, and all of a sudden an out-of-state interest comes in, wants to run cattle on that, and they pay enough, they lose that land.
Yeah, and I think sometimes when people think about, you know, they're leasing it for, you know, $20 or whatever an acre, we're talking about, you know, massive amounts of acres. So it could cost them $26,000 a year to lease this land. And it takes 50 acres a cow-calf unit there. So it's not like down here in green country where there's all this grass and you see a 5-acre pasture and they've got, you know, I don't know, 10, 15 head of cattle on it. I mean, out there, for every, you know, 50 acres will only sustain a mother and a calf.
Yeah. No, it's really interesting. And Colleen, I know in the festival, there are some other films that sort of deal not necessarily with this particular issue, but this whole issue of the New West and the conflicts inherent in the New West. Can you talk about some other films that do this?
Right. Well, Oklahoma, especially in Tulsa, I don't think that most of us consider ourselves Western. But as Sheila has spoken to, we still have these issues that are very inherently Western, land management issues. Another documentary that we are showing on the same night, Thursday, that's following Lone Man's Land at 7:45. We have a film called Unbranded. And this is also a documentary, deals with a few cowboys from Texas who are concerned about the issue of the wild Mustangs out west. And there's so many of them being rounded up and either adopted out or kept in pens. And it's kind of an issue that no one really has an answer for right now. And they adopted a group of these Mustangs, decided to tame them and ride them from the Mexican border up to the Canadian border, all through public lands. So this is something that is kind of a iconic American story of taming the West and being on this wild land. And we still do have public land to do that on. So that's it's a striking portrait of really Americana and this kind of Western lifestyle that is still around today that we, some of us being in the city, don't think about. So, yeah, those are pair of films that night. There's a short film sandwiched in between that is a Western, but it's a narrative film. Hopefully that'll encourage some discussion and a little more about these kind of issues.
Now, Sheila, is this the first showing for the film, or have you been showing it already?
No, we had a premiere in Tulsa, mm-hmm. And we sold out both shows at the Circle Cinema. And we've shown it at a lot of, like, little theaters. We really have been trying to get a grassroots effort of support. We actually go back out to Kenton, Oklahoma, next week to film integral part. There's another auction, and so
yeah, I was going to say, I was going to ask. This is the month when they're going to do the next auction for the next three or 5 years now?
We'll see what they're going to say on whether it's three or five.
They've been talking about switching to 3 years instead of 5 years, which would make it even worse.
Yeah,
where you basically have absentee landowners that could really rape the land and leave it in 3 years.
Yeah, we've been really encouraged. Just people when they see our film, always ask, "What can we do? You know, how can we help?" And we'll talk about that on Thursday, I think, at the end.
Yeah. I have to tell you, part of the reason for the sympathy is the cinematography on this film. There's so much. It is beautiful footage. And you really capture that wild nature of what Kenton's like. If anybody has not been out to Kenton, you would say, this is not Oklahoma. This is Arizona or New Mexico or Utah or Nevada or someplace like that. It is literally a very different Oklahoma, and I have to commend your cinematographer because there's these wonderful, wonderful time-lapse photography of sunsets and sunrise, and you get a sense of that big sky and just the wildness of the land.
Thanks. That was Ezra shot, and our main cinematographer was Lance Rivas, who did a great, great job. And, you know, when people – I've taken a lot of people out there now just – going back and forth, and usually they'll say, why in the world would anyone want to live here? And as we leave, they say, why would anybody want to leave? Once you go there and feel that. It's more than just a visual. It's an experience. I mean, it's a sensory experience there.
Now, I've been through that place many times, and it probably took some time to get the trust of the people on the land. How have you gone about doing that?
You know, it was really pretty easy. I think that once they saw when I was writing the story that I think once I came back the second time was when I broke through with them. Because I'm sure, you know, it's so beautiful. And I think people hear their story and they think, oh, something's got to be done. But nobody ever goes back. And I think the fact that I was willing to go back probably 10 times in 1 year just to write the story and then triple that probably to film it. They were really open. And they want their story told. They want their story told.
Now, have they had a chance to see the film
They
yet?
Have. We
have
had
you had a
big...
filming in, what, would be Guymon?
We showed it in Boise City at this little restored music theater. So that was great. We had the red carpet, and they all came out and saw it, and that was great. And then in Guymon, we were actually we ran a whole weekend, Labor Day weekend, and we were the second highest-ranked film there. So we got a lot of attention.
So how's this resonated with people of that area? I'm sure in Cimarron County, it's resonating very strong, but that's a very small population-wise county. What about the rest of the panhandle? Do they sense these same issues the same way?
Well, they do, and it's what's so interesting is, you know, being a storyteller, I'm always like have my ear for the next story. So I have pages and pages now of information because people will come to our film and then there's always an issue. You know, they're like, well, we've got this issue now here, you know. But sort of the issue's the same, is they feel like people just aren't listening to their plight. And, you know, we subsidize a lot of things, and we give a lot of tax breaks for a lot of things that have nothing to do with people's livelihood. And this is their livelihood.
Yeah. Now, we managed to capture in the film this sort of attitude of otherness that, you know, because when we think of the panhandle, we say, oh, out in the panhandle. And it's like it's another place. It's not part of Oklahoma. The same for the panhandle folks. It's downstate.
Yeah, they call us downstaters. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's really interesting. And how you made this film was somewhat interesting. You used Kickstarter.
We did. Ezra contacted me and you know, I was honestly a little leery. I thought, he's like, well, I'm going to run a Kickstarter campaign right before Christmas, and I'm going to try to raise, you know, this amount of money. And I was like, okay, I'm going to be in India. I was going to India. I was like, I'm going to be in India for a few weeks when I come back. I came back, and he raised that amount of money. We realized, you know, we've learned a lot about it, and this was my first film experience, is you need to probably ask for about three times as much money as we did. But we self-funded between the two of us, you know, since then.
Now, will there be any sort of business of film sessions as a part of the festival at all?
Yes, we actually have a couple panels that are being run in conjunction with the Tulsa Office of Film, Music, Arts, and Culture.
Mm-hmm.
We have a Friday afternoon session about entrepreneurship and filmmaking. So how you can be a filmmaker, how you can start off, and how you can support yourself in independent media. We also have a session on Saturday about documentary filmmaking in Oklahoma. So if anyone that attends any of these films are interested more in what it takes to create a documentary or hearing from Oklahoma documentarians about what their experiences have been, then I encourage anyone and everyone to come to these sessions. They're free. They're open to the public. If you come to our Saturday session, we will give you a discounted ticket for the following films as well.
So how do people get more information on the film festival?
TulsaAmericanFilmFest.com. We are also on Facebook. We are on Instagram. Hashtag TAFFest2015. we're a grassroots effort, much like Lone Man's Land was a grassroots effort to connect an Oklahoma story with the rest of Oklahoma and the rest of the world. We are really, really interested in connecting with filmmakers and connecting the general public with film as well.
Well, if all the rest of the documentary films are the quality of Lone Man's Land, it's going to be an excellent film festival. Congratulations on the film.
Thank you.
It is really well done. It's beautiful to look at. It's a compelling story. You meet some wonderful, wonderful people out there in Kenton. You know, but I have to say, the long-term prognosis for Kenton does not look good. When you first started going out there and writing about the Kenton Mercantile, you know, that was the business that, and a lot of people would go out there just to go by Black Mesa and then hit Kenton on the way out. Now that's all gone. The dude ranches that I think you first started writing about, they're sort of gone now. What is the long-term prognosis for Canton?
Well, tourism still is an integral part of their economy there in Canton because it's so beautiful. And there are now, I think, 4 bed and breakfasts there.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't know the answer. I don't know what's going to happen there. I wish someone would come in and buy the Merck and open up a store because there's so much traffic that comes through there. You know, if people are listening may not know exactly where that is, but if you've driven 412 to go skiing to Colorado or to go to New Mexico, you've passed through Main Street Canton.
Well, we wish you great success with the film, and I guess that these auctions next week will help determine a lot of that future because a lot of these ranch families are going to depend on getting leases to continue their lifestyle.
Yeah, we have our fingers crossed on that.
Well, Sheila and Colleen, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Colleen Thurston is the program director for the Tulsa American Film Festival. Sheila Bright is a documentary filmmaker and writer-director of Lone Man's Land, which opens the festival tomorrow evening at 6 at the Circle Cinema. The Tulsa American Film Festival takes place Thursday through Sunday at the Circle Cinema with special events at the Woody Guthrie Center and at Gilcrease Museum. For a complete schedule and ticket information, visit TulsaAmericanFilmFest.com. You're listening to Studio Tulsa. Here's the comments of Barry Friedman.
I want to try something here. Nina was loving, compassionate, dedicated, and strong. She was cherished. She was wanted, and she is so deeply missed by so many. She loved being outdoors. She was an avid hunter and loved camping and four-wheeling in the mountains. She was on the cusp of adulthood. She was a scholarship recipient and had just enrolled for the first time in college classes. She had an infectious smile and an aura of kindness about her. She would go out of her way to say hello to someone or to make them feel welcome. She lived with an authentic sweetness about her. The twinkle in her eyes standing as the only reminder that the quiet and serious girl before you was only a joke away from laughter and silliness. Our hearts are broken and her missing presence... Okay, let me stop. I didn't write that. My daughter is alive. Rebecca Corin's family wrote that, and she's not. Nina goes to Rogue Community College in Medford, which is exactly 103 miles to Umpqua Community College in Roseburg, where Rebecca was shot to death on October 1st. Nina is 25. Rebecca was 19. Two girls, two daughters, two community colleges, one state. I talked to Nina the day Rebecca was killed. I talked to her the next day, and then we missed a day, and then we talked the day after. It was Sunday. She told me about her job at her restaurant and how they wanted her toast and work the deli. When I asked her about her school, her classes, she asked me to help her with a problem about vectors. She's now majoring in physics. She was eating something. It was a beautiful sound. My daughter, on a Sunday afternoon, crunching her organic chips, asking me a question to which she knew I didn't know the answer. Rebecca wanted to be a dental assistant. And while I was on the sofa with the sound of the TV off, reminding my daughter it was a physical impossibility for her to love me more than I loved her, Rebecca's parents were planning a funeral. I am going to see Nina in a few months. She and Ari, her French husband, are coming to Tulsa over Christmas and Hanukkah. We're going to eat bagels and pizza and take drives, and they'll speak French to each other, and I'll say fromage and sacre bleu over and over, and they'll laugh. I will cry when she gets off the plane. I will cry when she gets back on it, and I'll hug her, and she'll get on her toes, and she'll say, Daddy. She's 26, and she still says that sometimes. I imagine Rebecca said that, too. Nina goes to Rogue Community College in Medford, which is exactly 103 miles to Umpqua Community College in Roseburg, where Rebecca was shot to death. I talked to Nina today. I will talk to her tomorrow. There will be a tomorrow.
Barry Friedman is a columnist for the Tulsa Voice and a regular contributor to Studio Tulsa. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.